ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of the Politics Now podcast. And navigating what our rapidly changing world means can be tricky.
I do think you're right to point to the ability of the backbench in Britain to agitate, be upset with Keir Starmer. That's one of the reasons he's gone.
That's why I'm joined by the sharpest political minds at the ABC to break down what each development means for Australia and how the government is positioning.
Albanese has got a much more compliant backbench and he's got much more dominance of the Parliament just because of peculiar Australian features of our system.
That's Politics Now with me, Patricia Carvelis. Find it on ABC Listen.
It's being dubbed the Mamdani effect, and support for democratic socialists is sweeping America after the election of Zoran Mamdani as New York's mayor last year. Now, another progressive candidate, Abdul El Sayed, has won a Democratic Senate primary in Michigan. Today, Jeff Kapaservis from the centre-right think tank, the Niskanen Centre, on whether they're a real threat to Donald Trump and the Republicans. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily.
Left-wing, progressive Muslim political outsider, or the man who took on the machine and won. Michigan's Abdul El Sayed has narrowly succeeded in becoming the state's Democratic candidate for the US Senate.
He edged out a well-funded moderate, making him the party's candidate in November's midterm elections.
When I watch Abdul, he's full of shit.
My name is not raising your gas prices. My name is not taking us to war. My name is not the reason you can't afford your groceries.
Jeff, wow. The Democratic primary in Michigan, that is what you call a close race, isn't it?
Yes, it's interesting because the Democratic primary in Michigan got national attention for the last several weeks because, well, number one, the Michigan race could determine control of the Senate this year. But number two, the progressive candidate, Abdul El Sayed, a doctor and epidemiologist, who is not a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, but is strongly endorsed by them and holds strongly left-wing positions. His opponent in that race was Representative Haley Stevens, who is maybe not a moderate, but more or less a standard-issue Democrat, I would say. And for several weeks, El Sayed had been projected by the polls to win strongly, maybe by double-digit margins. Mm. And as it turned out, it came down to the wire. He just barely pulled it out.
Yeah, he won by a margin of less than 1 percentage point. That's what you call close.
Yeah.
So he does win, though. What does he have to say after his victory is declared?
Well, I think he has a strong interest in presenting himself as maybe not quite as far to the left as he came across during the primaries.
This country of ours, this America of ours, is more than a flag. It's more than a set of colors. If you're a patriot, then you better fight for an America that is America for all of her kids. That's what this is about.
What he now has to do, if he is going to defeat the Republican candidate in Michigan, Mike Rogers, a Republican who had previously run pretty strongly several years ago, then he's going to have to present himself as somebody who will be acceptable to the moderate wing of the Democrats and maybe also someone who can pick up some other votes, even from former Trump supporters.
And Donald Trump, he came out swinging after Abdul El Sayed's victory, saying he's a man of hate.
Abdul El Sayed, lovely gentleman, he's a man of hate. And now he's going around saying, no, I love everybody, I love, he doesn't love everybody. Put him in office, you're going to find out what he loves. He doesn't love Israel. He doesn't love Jewish people. He hates them. He hates them with a passion that burns in his heart, and there's not a frickin' thing he can do about it.
Well, in a way, the DSA victories are a kind of gift to the Republican Party, because with Donald Trump at near record levels of unpopularity with the electorate, the Republican Party needs to find some way of charging up its base. And communism and the threat of communism historically has been a red flag to many of the party's voters.
What they're trying to do, not they want to skip socialism. They want to go right down to the bottom of the barrel. That's communism. They want it to be a communist country. We're not letting them have it as a communist country, not even for a minute.
So making an argument that communism is on the rise within the Democratic Party and that these DSA-backed candidates are in some sense fundamentally un-American is a strong appeal for the Republican Party. Now, it is true that El-Sayed has been extremely, extremely critical of Israel. And you and I have talked before, Sam, about how far criticism of Israel goes before it turns into anti-Semitism. But it has to be said that the Democratic Party as a whole has shifted against Israel even over the past several months. So he isn't as far out of the mainstream, perhaps, as maybe he once might have appeared. Mm. He has endorsed quite left-wing positions in the past, even verging on calling for police defunding and the abolition of ICE. While defunding the police is still unpopular, I would say, both nationally and even within the Democratic Party, abolishing ICE doesn't seem to be as far out there a position within the ranks of Democrats as it used to be either. No. So like I said, he'll try to make a case for kissing and making up, metaphorically speaking, with the moderate wing. And already there's some evidence that the party in Michigan is trying to come together.
All right. Well, just to note, Abdul El-Sayed, he does say he supports Jews and he's very concerned for their safety.
I want you to know that my commitment to your safety, my commitment to Jewish safety, is the same commitment that I have to the safety of my own daughters.
Now, he is a pretty smooth political operator, though, isn't he? He's good on the social media. What is it, do you think, that attracted voters in Michigan to him?
So El-Sayed is indeed an attractive campaigner. He's in some ways perhaps suggestive of Zoran Mamdani, who also is an attractive campaigner with the mastery of social media. El-Sayed has been a leader from a very young age. He was a Rhodes Scholar. He has an attractive personal story in many ways. But, you know, I think to some extent what might be going for him and some other candidates on the left is that they come across as authentic, angry, at a time when the Democratic electorate is angry, and willing to fight Donald Trump and the Republicans in a way that maybe the party's establishment doesn't seem to be willing to do.
But as you say, he now has to win against the Republican Mike Rogers for this Senate spot.
Yep.
And really, this isn't a Democratic stronghold, is it? It's not purely a blue state.
You know, Michigan is a funny state like a lot of the Midwestern states. On some level, it is a very Democratic state because it has sent Democrats to Congress and particularly to the Senate for quite a few cycles now. On the other hand, Donald Trump did win that state in 2024. So it's a purple state, I guess I would say.
Okay, so the real test will come in November during the midterms.
Yeah.
But Jeff, why don't we have a deeper look at who these Democratic Socialist candidates are, what they stand for, and why they are increasingly popular. Now, the significance of El-Sayed's win can't really be underestimated because it comes after a string of wins for left-leaning candidates who define themselves as Democratic Socialists. We've seen it in New York City too, haven't we, and elsewhere.
Sure. So one of the biggest political stories last year was Zoran Mamdani's election as New York City mayor.
Years from now, may our only regret be that this day took so long to come.
And that was a real come-from-nowhere victory. He was barely ranking 1%, even a few months before the election, and he won pretty convincingly. And then in June of this year, Mamdani endorsed a slate of mostly DSA-backed candidates, and they pretty much swept their primaries, beating more moderate or at least more Democratic establishment-affiliated kind of candidates. So these were big upsets, and they kind of made Mamdani into a political kingpin of sorts almost overnight. And they pointed to the advantages that the DSA can bring to some of these races in terms of enthusiastic volunteers and organizational capabilities.
But just to note as well, of course, that Bernie Sanders, he sort of got all of this going way back in 2016.
Yeah.
Election days come and go, but the struggle of the people to create a government which represents all of us and not just the 1%. That struggle continues.
I mean, of course, the Democratic Socialists of America goes back to 1982, mm-hmm. when Michael Harrington, who was a well-known writer and thinker on liberalism and democracy, really helped make it what it is. It's grown a lot, but it's also become, I would say, more internally divided. Although Donald Trump, you know, is using his usual broad brush, shall we say, to paint all DSA members as communists. Mm-hmm. It is true that some of the leadership in recent years has been pretty open about their enthusiasm for communist schemes. The latest DSA platform came out calling for the abolition of the Senate and takeovers of corporations and much of the private sector. It's arguably moving in a more radical direction than what it stood for back when Bernie Sanders first came to public attention.
Yeah, although he has been involved now endorsing some of these candidates. But yeah, that Fox News interview that DSA's national co-chair Megan Romer gave, that was pretty telling, wasn't it? Because she really wanted to abolish a lot.
Yes, she cheerfully responded to the Fox News interviewer that she would like to see open borders, prison abolition, the end of the Senate. Yeah, pretty much down the list.
Abolish the Senate.
True.
Okay, replace the presidency and Supreme Court as we now know them.
Yep.
Abolish ICE.
Absolutely.
Abolish borders and give amnesty to anyone currently in the U.S. illegally.
As a long-term plan, yep.
Defund the Pentagon.
Absolutely.
Well, Jeff, let's have a look now at how big a problem this might be for the Democrats. Is this a sign that the party really needs to move to the left? Is that the takeaway from this?
I mean, in some ways, I would argue that the party has been moving to the left, mm-hmm. you know, in the sense that the vibe among, I would say, mainstream Democratic voters at this point is anti-establishment, anti-corruption, which, you know, refers not just to Trump, but I think also to billionaires and an inequality in America more generally, anti-ICE. And then there's also been, I would say, a considerable decline in Israel's standing within the Democratic Party and even to some extent within American public opinion more generally. So I don't think the left is quite as far to the left, at least in that sense, as it used to be. Mm. But I think there's also, especially in the Democratic Party, just a real sense of anger at Donald Trump seeming to have his way and doing things that go beyond the boundaries of what any previous presidential administration had done, and a feeling that, again, Democrats just are not doing enough to fight back, and that maybe the left could mobilize populations around this new form of populism in somewhat the same way that Donald Trump really made the Republican Party into a populist force.
Well, the Democrats, they do have a huge decision, though, don't they, when it comes to who they want to be the presidential nominee in 2028? I mean, could a DSA candidate get up? Is it possible? And who would it be?
Well, I think a lot of the fights that are going on right now in the midterms are what the character of the Democratic Party will be in 2028, and especially who the nominee will be. Because when you actually have a presidential nominee, you can't really be all things to all people. You kind of have to run in a more unified and coordinated way. And we haven't mentioned Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, mm-hmm. but, you know, she is being advanced quite seriously in certain circles of the Democratic Party as a potential 2028 nominee. Bernie seems a bit old at this point. Mm-hmm. And AOC is actually playing kind of an interesting game because I wouldn't quite say that she has moderated. She came out quite strongly for El Sayed and some of these other DSA-backed candidates. But she is showing herself to be a formidable political player on the national stage. But I think the question before the Democrats is whether they're going to be able to repair some of the damage to their brand that's occurred over the last decade, whether especially they'll be able to regain their standing, especially with working class voters who do make up about 2/3 of the electorate, or whether they've gone too far out culturally and whether this turn toward DSA socialism will gain back some of those disaffected working class voters, or whether this will turn them off further.
So what do you think, though, Jeff? Do you think the DSA can maintain this momentum and keep growing? How many of these candidates could actually get up, do you think?
Well, you know, the most well-known younger members of DSA who've gained office have been Zoran Mamdani as New York City mayor and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Mm-hmm. And they seem to be pretty savvy politicians. At this point, Mamdani's approval ratings in New York are quite high, and some of the anticipated backlash hasn't materialized yet. But then again, neither have they gone in the direction of calling for nationalization of industries or other things that one might perhaps expect of socialists. And I think, you know, the DSA people have been correct in sensing that one of Donald Trump's great vulnerabilities is the affordability agenda. Mm. Donald Trump campaigned on the promise that he would bring down the prices of groceries and gas, but groceries have gone up since he's been in office, and gas especially has soared after his Iranian invasion. And, you know, there's a certain amount of demoralization in some parts of Trump's base. Whether those people would then respond to the anti-establishment populist energies of the DSAs is to be determined.
Jeff Cabaservis is the Vice President for Political Studies at the Niskanen Center, a center-right think tank in Washington, D.C. This episode was produced by Ilaria Brophy and Louise Milan. Audio production by Cinnamon Nippard. Our supervising producer is Sydney Peed. I'm Sam Hawley. ABC News Daily. We'll be back again on Monday. Thanks for listening.